Hello and welcome to the King of Breast podcast with Dr. Jen, the show dedicated to empowering women through knowledge, tools, and resources to take control of your breast health journey. I'm your host, Dr. Jen Simmons, and I'm thrilled to have you join me on this insightful and inspiring journey. As a breast cancer surgeon turned functional medicine physician, I'm on a mission to empower women to live their breast, I mean best lives. This podcast dives deep into all topics related to breast health, including prevention, diagnosis, treatment, and holistic approaches to support overall well-being. You know what I say, breast health is health. So no matter who you are, a breast cancer survivor, newly diagnosed, in treatment, living with metastatic disease, or you're simply seeking to improve your breast health, this podcast is for you. Join us on this transformative path towards better breast health and a thriving life. And now, let's get to today's episode. Hi there, it's Dr. Jen, and welcome back to another episode of the Keeping Abreast podcast. I am delighted and honored to have Dr. Daniel Pompa with us today. I have been stalking him for quite some time now, and so I'm truly, truly honored that I got you to come today because we're talking about something that is so very important. When I look back on my 25 years, let's say, treating women with breast cancer, I see a recurrent theme again and again and again, and it's hypothyroidism.
Right.
And I had someone on recently, Dr. Alan Christensen, who told me that there's no connection between hypothyroidism and breast cancer. And I'm really struggling with that. So we're going to get well into that. But first, let me give you a little introduction. You are a global leader in the health and wellness industry, and no one knows that more than me because I've been stalking you. You're an author, a speaker, a media personality with degrees from the University of Pittsburgh and Life University. You are an icon in alternative health and the wellness industry, and you've spent more than 20 years traveling across the country, educating practitioners and the general public on the root causes of inflammation-driven diseases. I know that you had your own bout with inexplicable illness. So, Dr. Pompa, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
And let's get to it.
Yeah. Great introduction. Thank you for having me here.
So, like most of us, you have a pain to purpose mission. So,
It chose me. I didn't choose it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's talk about how it chose you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, like so many people, right? It just started with fatigue. And I thought I was just overtraining at the time. I was running a very busy practice, two young boys, and I was riding 250, 300 miles a week on a bike, training for races. Big enthusiast, plugged in everywhere, high energy. Maybe I'm just overtraining. So I did the right thing. I took time off and things didn't get better. As a matter of fact, they got worse. I took more time off. Things were getting worse, not better. And complicating. It went from fatigue to weird headaches. Never had this. If I just rode 5 miles, I mean, that was nothing at that time. I mean, I would ride 100 miles in a day. I would just get this weird headache. And then I started becoming intolerant to every food I was eating. So I was playing the food game, chasing foods, which it was never a problem. I ate healthy and I had none of those types of allergies. Then it became anxiety, couldn't sleep, insomnia. Couldn't get to sleep, wake up in the middle, I couldn't get back to sleep. Like most, I chased my thyroid, I chased my adrenals, because there is no doubt they weren't functioning correctly. My hair was thinning, you know, I had every symptom that thyroid people have. But I got a blood test. Matter of fact, I ran $5,000 worth of blood tests and money I didn't have. I didn't have insurance.
So you turned over all the rocks.
I did. I mean, I was searching, and I had an ability to, you know, at least my degrees, they didn't get me well, but it allowed me to read literature pretty well. And I am dyslexic. So I have this memory that can put things together and put the pieces together. And I did do that. And everything I teach today came out of this battle, but that blood test came back normal. As a matter of fact, That doctor looked at me, and I know the look, and he said, "Son, you're healthier than me." And I could tell what his next thoughts
All your
were.
labs are normal, right?
Yeah,
All your
exactly.
labs are normal. How many times do people hear that? All your labs are normal.
Yeah, and yet I knew I wasn't. And of course, that was a bad day. I mean, honestly, if he said, "Oh, you have cancer, here's," I'd be like, "All right, I'm gonna fight." You know, I mean, at least I know what I'm up against. But I didn't. You know, I mean, that was back in 1999. It was 2000, 2001, 2003. And then I started getting to the answers. And fast forward, and I
How
did.
long a period were you sick?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, those 3 to 4 years were dark years. And then I started coming out, and then I started coming to the answers. And you know, look, mercury in my pituitary hypothalamus, that's a place in your brain that controls your thyroid, controls your adrenals, most of your hormones. So, you know, when I realized, okay, I was downstream trying to help my thyroid, my adrenals, and it wasn't working. I realized at one point that something's wrong with the control tower. I could tell the feedback. The hypothalamus kind of takes in hormone information, and then it will drive the pituitary, and then that can tell your thyroid what it needs to produce, not produce. And I could tell the problem was there. I just didn't know what it was. And when I would address it, I'd get worse. And then I started reading literature that mercury accumulates there, especially from these fillings, which fast forward, because I actually thought, you know, I think I have a mercury issue just by some of my symptoms. And I did a blood test. In that $5,000 were the tests. I did a blood test, which came out normal. So that was very frustrating. But a year or so later, I was working with a very bright endocrinologist, and he said, "I think you have mercury toxicity." I'm like, "Oh, I thought so too. I did a blood test, wrong test." That would have been if I had acute, meaning kind of poisoned every day, if you will. But that wasn't the case. It was chronic, and there was another
Your
test.
body tries to take it out of your bloodstream and put it somewhere so
Exactly.
that it's not hurting you, right?
So the one thing I was right about, you know, was accumulated in my brain, honestly, and several
So
places.
how did you determine that? What was that test?
You know, there's not a perfect test for brain mercury, so I want to be clear there without doing biopsy, right? So I wish we had such a test. I challenged it out of my tissue with a water-soluble chelator, and matter of fact, when I did that test, I got very sick. So there's I have a better way of doing it now, but the
So
point
people
was,
do get very sick when they do those provoked
I'm
tests.
not a fan of IV because it violates half-life of these chelators. I mean, you put a lot in, chelator goes away, and now you redistribute mercury. That happened to me. As a matter of fact, that was a big part of what I had to learn how to really get this out of my body, in particular my brain. But anyways, I did challenge it out, and I had bizarre accumulation of metals, and heavy metals accumulate in your body, as do many other toxins. And by the way, I want to point something out. When I deal with very challenged people that don't know what's wrong, most of the time it's a perfect storm. And if you remember the George Clooney movie, The Perfect Storm, three weather fronts come together and create a catastrophic storm. And that's what we see. So I'm always telling people, you have to look for this perfect storm. It could be emotional, physical, chemical, two chemical, emotional, any combination of stress, because really the body doesn't know the difference. And I was living in a low-grade moldy home at the time. I did accumulate a lot of mercury from my fillings. I wore contact lenses in the 70s, 80s, early 90s, which the saline solution had a form of mercury called thimerosal, which is an ethyl type of mercury, goes into the brain very easily. But the point was, is that I was, like most people, I got my first batch from my mother, who had silver fillings, and there's a study called the DRASH study. Ladies, the number of silver fillings in your mom's mouth or your mouth is proportional to how much, on autopsy studies, that they find in babies' brains. So mercury accumulates, especially in nerve tissue like our brain. And then the mold exposure, mold produces a neuro, meaning a nerve toxin like the brain, a neurotoxin called a biotoxin because it's produced by a living thing, but it also accumulates in cells and tissues. And so I was accumulating. And of course, I had a lot of physical stress on the training and work I was doing. There was my perfect storm. And that's my bottom fallout. So we have to look for people's perfect storm. Typically, it's not one thing. We want it to be one thing, but it's not. And if we get to that, and this is the simplest analogy I can give everyone. Okay, imagine that we all have a bucket, right? Genetically, some of us has smaller ones, some of us has bigger ones, and we'll call it the stress bucket. From the time in utero, this bucket starts filling with chemicals, as I just pointed out. And matter of fact, lead is a chemical. The number one source is mom. So it starts filling in utero, and then it starts filling with other stressors, emotional, trapped emotions, traumas, right? Other biotoxins, living in moldy homes, vaccinations. I can continue to go until one day that bucket overflows. And then that's when the symptoms start. And most of us, well, we'll start trying different supplements, diets, maybe medications, hormones. We start reaching, and yet we're going, oh, I'm still not well. Ultimately, we have to empty that bucket. And if we do it, we give our body a chance to heal. The body can heal, but we have to remove the interference. So I'm oversimplifying this, but that accumulation of neurotoxins is why we're seeing the surge of hormone conditions, including thyroid, diabetes. 80 some percent of diabetes is not diet related, as simple as we think. It's certain toxins. When you go to Italy, where they eat 20% more carbs, and yet you don't see fat people, and diabetes is a fraction. So you wonder, is it something else? Well, it is. Toxins are playing a big role in all hormone resistance. And Jen, what I mean by that is we think it's so simple. I just need more hormones. If that were working, okay, we would have solved the hormone crisis, epidemic in
For
this country.
sure.
It's not that simple. Our cells have to hear the hormones. I mean, there's receptors on every cell that these hormones have to dock to and either get themselves in the cell or their message. And when that doesn't happen, it's called hormone resistance, like insulin resistance is type 2, right? So the better question is what's stopping these hormones from doing that? Because most people that don't feel well have hormone resistance driven by certain toxins that are driving something called cellular inflammation, which blocks all of these receptors. And this is really the problem. I get a little frustrated in the topic because I've spent 20 years teaching doctors, and I feel like oftentimes I'm just meeting that thing of like doctors want to give because people want that, just that one thing. Just give me that one hormone. Just give me that one pill. When I'm saying, no, the problem is we have a society of inflamed cells. We can't even get good nutrition in our cells. So that's why diet change half the time doesn't work. All these people are hormonally disrupted, and we're just trying to throw hormones at it. Remember, my blood work was normal from all my hormones, even though I was a hormonal disaster.
Well, because they were measuring your hormone levels and they were there probably, but if your receptors are blocked, which, this is part and parcel of what's happening. It's that, I mean, some of it, when you think about thyroid hormone, some of it is that the iodine molecule is replaced by a fluoride molecule. And so, that hormone doesn't work, but some of it is where these environmental toxins are acting on receptors. I mean, I know Yvonne Carney, who is an OBGYN who helps women in menopause. And, her main thing is we got to get your receptors working again. Like, there's a lock and key system happening here, and you may have the key, but your lock doesn't work.
Exactly. It looks like this. I don't know. You have probably viewers and you probably have listeners. So, listeners,
Both.
I drew a cell and it's a circle. And then on that circle, I'm giving people a visual. There's little receptors that look like little antennas, right? It's oversimplified. It's like a cell tower, right? That your phone has to connect to. Your hormones have to attach to these receptors. And on it, I drew thyroid T3 hormone. I drew insulin. I drew estrogen. And I could have drawn any hormone, but they have to attach to that and either let into the cell or a message into the cell. And when that happens, you feel well. You burn fat normally. Because your cells can only use two things for energy, sugar or fat. Hormonally healthy people have the ability when they're not eating to burn fat. And we make ketones for our brain and we make energy from the fat all as well. But many people today, because they're hormonally deaf, meaning your cells aren't hearing your hormones, despite what your blood levels look
Oh,
like.
I like that term.
And so what happens then is that we are not able to even burn fat for energy. So we're stuck as sugar burners with the hormonal inability to burn fat for energy. So what does that look like? Here's what it looks like. You have no energy to get through a day. Oh, and when you're not eating, guess what? You either have cravings you can't resist, so you fail on diets, not your fault, or you break down muscle into sugar because that's all your body can use. So you're wasting muscle and it lowers your metabolism, especially at night, because you need a lot of energy at night. And your body, a healthy cell, will burn fat at night. You don't, because you're breaking your muscle down. But see, here's what no one's telling us is that that is a hormone problem, right? If your mitochondria, that's the area in your cell that makes energy, if it can't use fat and we're only able to use sugar, yeah, you're a sugar burner, but yet you have all of these energy problems. You have brain fog. You end up with anxiety because at night, or you wake up in the middle of the night and don't sleep well because your body has to release cortisol just to stimulate some glucose dumping. Otherwise, your brain dies. So, do you understand? It's like these hormone problems, it's a deeper problem. It's a cell problem. You have to fix the cell to get well. And you know that's my message, right?
Absolutely. So let's dovetail back to where I'm struggling, because literally, if I go through the mental Rolodex, I know you're old enough to understand what a Rolodex is. Not everyone that I speak
We all
to
had
is.
Rolodexes, yes.
But if I go to the mental Rolodex of my brain, and when we look at those diagnoses that come up for people, hypothyroidism is nearly 80% of my patients come to me with thyroid dysfunction.
That's right.
So if hypothyroidism is not a precursor to breast cancer, then why is it there so much? And I know association is not causation. I get it, but there's too much overlap for me to figure out how it's completely unrelated.
And your guest, in all respect, said something that's probably scientifically true, meaning there's no connection between hypothyroid and cancer because there perhaps wasn't a study done. So he said something technically correct. However, what do we need? What do we mean by associated, right? I would argue that the toxins that are driving this thyroid epidemic are the same toxins that are driving cancer. Now, the thyroid is what we call the canary in the coal mine. And again, the Rolodex, if that didn't date us, this will. So they literally, in the old days, had to bring canaries in coal mines because they didn't have technical equipment like we do today to say, there's a gas, get out. They would get the miners out, right? No, literally, canaries went into coal mines because they would die first. This is the analogy of the
Wait,
thyroid.
do they not do that anymore? Do they no longer
No,
bring canaries into the coal mine?
It's newsflash. They have really good equipment now for
I
this.
don't watch the news, so.
So, oh, and by the way, just so you know, Rolodexes, yeah, we don't even need those anymore. Take your Rolodex, I see
That
on your.
I know.
All right, good. But anyways, yeah, so the canary literally would die, and then it gave the miners a certain amount of time to get out. So the point is they were ultra sensitive to certain toxins, right? Okay, the thyroid is the canary in the coal mine, meaning it is the first group of cells, gland, to actually be affected. That's why even when I was sick, my blood work was still normal. Now, maybe 10 years later, it would have went off because estimates are 10, 20, even 30 years of dysfunction before your blood work goes off. Okay, that's a whole nother point. But the point is it's the first to have symptoms. You mentioned chlorine, right? Or maybe fluoride, I'm sorry. And then
Fluoride.
bromine. Someone just sent me this morning. Finally, the FDA in this country is outlawing something called brominated vegetable oil, BVOs, which have been outlawed in Europe for many, many years. You know,
Right? It's about time, right?
yeah, because I mean, come on, how many years have we known that the bromine is a thyroid disruptor? It pulls these toxins deeper into the thyroid itself. Okay, that's one example. What about the fluoride in the water that we know is a halogen chemical, the chlorine in the water? This is just one example. You know, they're putting aluminum in jet fuel. It makes it more efficient. It's part of this secret sauce to save billions of dollars because if we can make jet fuel more efficient, this aluminum is falling down.
Falling down.
Yeah, into acid rain, into our food, into our water. Aluminum and mercury go for thyroid like crazy. So the canary in the coal mine. Now, I could show you studies showing that these very chemicals are cancer drivers. Fluoride, Google fluoride and bone cancer. Watch what comes up. Okay, so the indirect correlation of why we see so many people first with thyroid conditions and then with cancer. How is there not an association? There is, because the cause is associated.
Yeah. And I think it's probably because we still don't practice root cause medicine in this country. We still practice symptom management in this country, that this goes completely unrecognized.
And Dr. Jen, I have to say this. I wish we could say an alternative medicine that it were different. Unfortunately, it's not. We're doing the same thing. We're caught into a trap of fancy tests. Right now, it's like, let's genetic test everyone. Let's gut test everyone. All these very expensive tests. And we're just giving people more supplements instead of saying, wait a minute, you don't get people well by knowing their genetics. We know that. We abandoned that so long ago. Now we're back to it. No, that gives us clues and maybe some things. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but the point is we still have to get to the cause, and alternative medicine is not doing it. I mean, my passion still, maybe it'll be on my gravestone. It's like we have to remove the interference, then the body will heal. I didn't get my life back, by taking fancy supplements. I didn't get my life back by a diet change. Diet change isn't even working for people anymore. Most people listening to my voice have changed their diet. They will argue that they eat better than their friends. They still can't lose this 10 pounds around their waist or thighs. It's like hormonally they're not right. They're taking hormones, they're changing their diet. What's wrong? Because we're not getting to the cause. That's what's wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. And, I hear people lamenting about it all the time, is that, I eat so much better than my friends. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't do this. I don't do that. And I'm the one that got breast cancer. And it's that bucket that you were talking about. And we're
Absolutely.
all kind of born with a different size bucket. And that is where the genetics do come in a little bit, but it
Yeah,
doesn't
no,
matter,
exactly. That's
right? It is
right.
what it
Exactly.
is.
Of course, that's why I said genetically, we all have a different size bucket, right? The genetics play a role, but we're not going to get people well with them. Oh, look at that one. That one looks
Oh,
like my son's dog. Is that a
yeah.
mini golden doodle?
No, he's just a toy poodle. This is Ted.
That looks like my.
Ted came in for his cameo. He was crying at my feet.
That looks like my son's dog, Yankee.
He's very cute and sometimes annoying. So
Yeah,
I totally get it. We are living in an increasingly more toxic world, but we still need to know what to do. So I hear you were getting it wrong. How do we get it right? Because thyroid disease is an epidemic. And yes, it is the canary in the coal mine, but it's an epidemic. We have a real problem with thyroid dysfunction.
Yes.
Now, why don't you, for people who don't understand that, because I think that most people still think like, oh, I gained a little weight. It must be my thyroid. It's just controlling like belly fat. What is going on? Why is the thyroid so important?
Well, look, I mean, the thyroid obviously has a huge impact on mitochondrial function. That's where we make cell energy. And that's where the thyroid comes into the cell. Attaches into the nucleus, affects the mitochondria, and it helps us burn fat for energy. It helps us make energy. It plays in all of these different pathways. And therefore, we know that most people can't get through a day because they're resistant to thyroid hormone. Once again, just to go back, that your cells aren't hearing it despite your blood levels, right? And again, I argue that if you have one hormone resistance, you have many others. Right. So we know that people with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, end up with thyroid problems, right? And then, of course, they're resistant now to estrogen, testosterone. It just keeps going because the problem is what is driving, the better question, I should say, is what is driving this hormone resistance? And it is inflammation of the cell. And we've heard, right? Inflammation is the cause of fill in the gap, cancer, diabetes, right? And that's true, but it's cellular inflammation. And yes, it blocks if I, did this, and here I'm showing for listeners, I'm showing the circle that I drew with those receptors, and I'm now drawing inflammation on the membrane on the outside of that circle. I drew a bunch of squiggly lines, and you can see if it's inflamed, of course, it blunts those hormone receptors, but also it doesn't allow the good stuff in the cell. And then toxins start building up in the cell. And those toxins end up, we talked a little bit about genes and their role. Well, toxins then build up in the cell and they start to trigger your genes. That means it's called epigenetics, meaning above your hard drive that you got from your parents, there's something more powerful that makes us all look different than our hard drive because humans have mostly the same genes, believe it or not. But the epigenome above it is more important. Toxins are the number one thing that have an ability to turn on your bad genes that we all inherit from our parents. And once those genes are triggered, turned on, then we start to express a thyroid condition, diabetes, don't feel well, all the symptoms we don't like. The science shows, though, that we can turn off those genes. If they can be turned off, they can be turned on. If you remember in the 90s, Time magazine, your DNA is not your destiny. That came out of the Human Genome Project of, hey, look, we thought I got a thyroid condition. My doctor told me because of my mother had it. I thought I got cancer because my mother had it, right? We inherit susceptibility, but the genes have to be turned on. And the good news is they don't have to be turned on if we live a cleaner life than our parents, but they also can be turned off. So big part of what I teach is, yes, we have to figure out what's driving inflammation. I said that was a better question. There are specific toxins that we need to talk about that you need to do something about. Now, again, we don't have time in this interview. I teach cellular detox. That's what I've taught now for almost 20 years. Cellular detox is these toxins accumulate in our cells, driving everything we just said, the inflammation, all the dysfunction. We have to get rid of them at the cell. Real detox is not a foot bath. It's not a colon cleanse. It's not a sauna. I like those things. I'm not even against them. I'm just saying it's more complicated than that. We have to fix this. When these detox pathways in the cell are downregulated, if you will, caused to not work as well because of the all of these toxins that we're exposed to. Now they start wearing down the detox pathways, and now we start building up more and more toxins in the cell. We start triggering our genes, our cellular energy drops, more inflammation. It goes on and on perpetually. Can't hear my hormones. I don't feel well. Okay, we have to get this cell doing what it should be doing, and that's detoxing itself.
And unfortunately, sometimes it's not even that you don't feel well, because I have the majority of my breast cancer patients come to me and say, I'm healthy, except I have breast cancer, right? And so we're so detached from what our health is and what health means that we don't even recognize it. And we've also, as a society, normalized a lot of things. You were very in touch with your fatigue because you are a high energy person and an athlete and all of that. But most people, even when they recognize that they're having fatigue, they go to their doctor. And what does their doctor say? Well, you're getting older. It's normal,
Oh,
right?
are you exercising? What's your diet like? Okay. And these people are going, I exercise. My diet's better than yours. I still don't feel well. I still have energy.
So I would like to, for the benefit of just educating people so that they can start to have the conversations with their providers, what are the major toxins that is affecting our health so adversely?
I want to start with an odd one. And I just came out of a seminar and I had two dentists run up to me and were like, finally, somebody's talking about something that we know. And that is a big problem that we're seeing. You brought up breast cancer, and the dentist was very quick to add in that every time he finds hidden infections in the jaw on the side of breast cancer. And that's not just him. He was stating that clinically, but that's actually been shown. So, what do I mean by hidden infections? And again, there's many things. I'm focusing on one odd one. There's these things called cavitations. Okay. And they're infections in the jaw, typically where we've had teeth removed, and it heals over. We have no pain, but it builds up an infection in there that we don't know is there. But unfortunately, it has a dramatic effect on the lymphatic channels on that side, and they drain actually into breast tissue. These infections disrupt your immune system greatly. They have the ability to turn on these genes very much, and it's an un are a hidden problem because people don't know they're there. Root canals are the same thing. The in under the root canal, even if you don't have pain, again, has been shown to show up on the side of breast cancer. I had two doctors that were people that I was helping, clients of mine, who at one ended up with thyroid cancer on the side of a root canal and the other throat cancer. Just two random cases, right? And of course, breast cancer as well. So I'm not just, keeping this to breast cancer, but they were going to the best of the best. And in a phone conversation, one was a friend of mine, I said, "Have you had a cone beam done?" Now, a cone beam is different than an X-ray. You don't see these things on dental X-rays. Cone beams are 3D X-rays, if you will, CAT scan of the jaw. Now, many dentists would look at these cone beams and read them as two-dimensional X-rays.
Yeah,
And
they read them as plain films.
exactly, you have
You
to have
can't.
special software that goes around and is able to look for these infections. You have to be trained in it, number one. So don't run out to your dentist and get a cone beam and show it to them. They have to be read correctly. But anyways, I said, "Have you had a cone beam?" In both of these cases, they got it and massive infection on that side. Now, those are both success stories. They ended up very well. Why? Without recancer. And one of those stories was many years ago because they got to the cause, right? We can kill cells. We can kill bad cells. We can wipe them out with many different things, including chemo, radiation. However, we know that 10 years later, many of these cancers end up coming back, showing up somewhere else, even. Because we didn't get to the cause. And again, this is one example of what people miss. Living in moldy homes is another example. I can't tell you how many people live in moldy homes. And I know you might have thought the case, and someone came, an expert in, and did an air test in there and said you don't have mold. 98% of all air tests are negative. Mold is behind walls. You don't see it, you don't smell it, and it doesn't air test. So, big problem. You have to have really, really good experts come in that test behind walls, look for where past damage was, past water damage, because if it wasn't dried in 36 hours, there's most likely mold that went dormant and is still sporing off biotoxins, which when your bucket's full, it's so nasty of a toxin, it overflows the bucket, and you don't even realize that that's when you got sick. And it could have been in a darn moldy home 20 years ago, and now you're not even in the home.
Because you're the factory, right?
Try it.
And one of the major problems with mold illness is that some people have the capacity to enzymatically deal with mold, and other people don't. And you can live in a home with someone, and you can be terribly affected, and they
Oh,
can be
and
totally unaffected,
they think you're crazy.
and everyone makes you feel like you're crazy.
Yeah.
Because this is what I went through in 2017.
Yeah, I'm very mold sensitive. I don't do well with mold. Really with any neurotoxin. I definitely, my bucket is genetically smaller, to keep it that simple, right? So, I'm the canary in the coal mine, unfortunately, in our family. But yeah, I'm like, this is a moldy place. We got to get out of here, kids.
I
And so
can't.
like,
I'm just like you, can't tolerate it. No, the second I walk into one.
me too. Me too. Yeah, I get certain weird things that happen, but the more I emptied my bucket, the more I can tolerate. In the old days, I would get a mold exposure unknowing, I'd be sick for days. Now, I get out of it, and within an hour, I'm okay. But if I stayed there for any length of time, who knows, right? But the point is though, so many people are exposed unknowing. It's the way we build buildings, by the way. If you go into these buildings in Europe that are 1,000 years old or more, and go, why don't they have mold? It's because the way they build them. We just happen to put perfect mold food behind walls. It's called drywall. And guess what's on it? Cellulose, paper. That's called mold food. All you do is add water, folks. The mold spores are here, right? See, these spores that are here, you can have an allergy to them, but they're not biotoxic. They're not producing a biotoxin. When mold forms behind a wall, it wants to protect itself from all other bacterias and molds. It produces a biotoxin, aka mycotoxin, that is its warfare that it plays with other germs and other bacterias and molds. And that is what makes you sick. This is not an allergy. Be clear. This is a biotoxic illness is the symptoms or everything we've been discussing. People all of a sudden end up with a thyroid condition. They gain weight rapidly. They start just frequent urination, can't sleep, anxiety. I mean, all of these things, bad gut, all of a sudden could be mold. So, we're not talking about an allergy here.
Yeah. Before we move away from this and talk about your next one, I want to go back to the dentistry because while you did talk about cavitations, you didn't talk about the other major area that, the heavy metal issue is prime has primarily been created by the dental industry because for many, many years, they were filling teeth with a heavy metal concoction that had mercury, that had cadmium, that had aluminum. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, that was the thing that made my bucket overflow, the straw that breaks the camel's back. These dark fillings, I don't say silver because they're not silver by the time
Right.
we look in our mouth. These dark
Yeah.
fillings that are in your mouth, they are called amalgams. Amalgam is a combination of everything you just said. 50% mercury, by the way. Oh, you know what the ADA said? I just did a social media piece on this about my story. I had two dentists say, "Show me one study." You know what? I hopped on there at lunch. I was literally having lunch by myself, and I just threw four. Not one, four new studies. One, it was like a Cochrane collaboration where they looked at all the studies and the conclusion,
Yeah.
these things are more toxic than we ever thought. They
Yeah.
leach mercury, the life of the filling, vaporized into your brain, right? How did my mercury get in my pituitary hypothalamus? These fillings were the start. Well, my mother's fillings were the start. My own fillings became it. And then contact lens fluid, mercury in my brain. And it took me some years to get it out of my brain, but my brain works better today at 58 than it did when I was in my 30s and started like thinking, what is wrong? So many people are walking around with brain fog. So many people are walking around just not, like they used to be, so to speak. These things accumulate in our brain tissue, right? If you have fillings or had them, here's another big mistake. Many people at the seminar this weekend, well, I had mine taken out. And myself and the dentist that was there said, well, here's the problem. That mercury vapor goes into the brain, turns to inorganic mercury. That has a half-life longer than we live, meaning it's locked in your brain, causing problems until you actually do a proper protocol to remove it. And that's the big part of what I teach. How to do, I get people to a brain phase because when we look at all of these things, the mold, the heavy metals, all the things we've been talking about, they end up in nerve tissue. And that's where these average detox at best products, protocols, whatever you want to call them, they really don't get to these major neurotoxins that are really driving this epidemic of problems that we're seeing.
Yeah. So we talked about the issues with dentistry and cavitations that are harboring these microinfections. We talked about the heavy metals, and that's not the only source because at this point, unfortunately, heavy metals are in lots of places that gain access.
Painful.
Our oceans are a huge issue now. And for people, now that is methyl mercury, which is different than the inorganic mercury that you're talking about that's off-gassing off of dental amalgams. But still, methyl mercury can do some damage too.
Absolutely. And people say, well, methyl mercury has it doesn't have a very long half-life. The problem is methyl mercury, aka organic mercury, that to your point is you get it in fish, right? And from the waters. And especially fish that eat a lot of other little fish, right? So if you're eating like a sardine, a very small fish, more of a vegetarian type of fish, They absolutely have less mercury. So be clear, they're the safer fish. And there's the bigger the fish, the bigger the problem. Think of it that way. The law of biological concentration. They eat more fish, they eat more fish, and then it just accumulates in their tissue and they live longer. So tuna is an example, shark is an example, marlin is an example. All the farm-raised fish are typically not healthy for multiple reasons. But yes, so this methyl mercury comes into your body and it still causes damage. It still disrupts your microbiome, and then it still can change to other forms of mercury, as we're saying. But methyl mercury does cross into tissues, and there, once it changes its form, like into the thyroid, now you have a new problem. So, yeah, we have to be careful with that as well.
And so what else are you looking for?
Well, look, when you know, we said like this is. We're hitting some of these big sources that make people really sick, but we kind of led to this earlier. I can't believe when I go to health seminars, if you will, and I watch people in our industry drink regular water. They'll come around with a pitcher and they'll pour water and they drink it. Okay, I don't do that. We mentioned the chlorine. Okay, we mentioned fluoride. These are thyroid disruptors, right? And it's not a small problem. It's a big problem. Oh, the drugs that are in that water. I always say this. If I had a test that I can instantly show somebody everything that's in that water, I don't
There's
think
no way they would drink it.
there's no way. It's like, but wait, do I need a test? It's like, because just Google this county's water and look what's acceptable, what they call acceptable on a normal test, and you'll go, oh yeah, I'm not drinking that water.
And incidentally, for anyone who wants to know what's in their drinking water, just go to the EWG.org, the Environmental Working Group.org. And plug in your zip code. And I hope you're sitting down when you do that, because the list of chemicals that come up that are in your drinking water is enough to make a strong man faint.
Yeah, and then ladies, I don't want to upset you here, but you use a lot of personal care products in the morning. Jen, there's a number there on average with this, but here's the point. Just for fun, go to the same website, the EWG website, and start putting in your personal care products, and you might have to lay down afterwards because realize how many hormone disruptors and how many toxins that you'll be shocked that are in those products.
I couldn't agree with you more. Talking about being at conferences, it always astounds me that we go to conferences and here's everyone like drinking out of plastic water bottles. And I'm like, are is this really happening? Like, are we really doing this? This is us? I mean, like here I am, like walking around with my filtered water bottle, and people think I'm crazy.
Well,
But
the microplastics in there are hormone disruptors, right? And again, we're talking about, we started this conversation saying we are a society now trying to get well from taking hormones, when instead of the cause of why we have real hormone disruption, hormone resistance, and everything that we're now talking about is the problem. Look, if you haven't picked up on it, one thing you can do right now is get a darn $300 reverse osmosis system put in your house. I think you should take it a step further and spend $1,000, maybe $2,000, and get a whole house water system, because a 10-minute shower is like chugging 8 glasses of chlorinated water, because you breathe it into your lungs and right into the bloodstream. So, I mean, there's some things you can do right away like that to massively drop these thyroid disruptors that you're taking into you and your family. What's your dishwashing soap? Because that's on your glasses that you're using every day. So many
And your
hormone
plates
disruptors in the plates.
and your
So
forks and
I'm
your
just throwing out
spoons
the
and
big things that you can change like that in your, right? Okay, maybe you can't afford all organic. Avoid the dirty dozen. That's like the Google Dirty Dozen. That's like the big disruptors with all the pesticides in it. But I mean, make these changes. I mean, don't wait.
I get questions all the time about
putting RO systems in, and it also takes out minerals. So do you supplement back in with minerals?
Yeah, look, I'm not a buyer into that because I know too much about minerals. Okay, it's first of all, what's in water is more of an elemental mineral. Can your body use them? Yes. It's not perfect, right? And some of them are even microbiome disruptors. But the bottom line is we want to get our minerals from plants. Plants grow in soil that has elemental minerals, pulls minerals up in, and it makes them usable to the human body, right? So there's a very different, you can drink perfectly clean water that doesn't have minerals like glacier water. And it's a very, very healthy water. So don't buy into the get your minerals from water thing. Not at all.
Great. I'm so glad to hear that. So obviously not everyone's provider is going to think in this grand scale like you. And that, you know, the world is changing, the world is evolving. We are starting to think about root cause medicine, but not nearly as quickly as we want. So I love that you gave us the water thing, that, you know, think about the products that you're putting on our skin. What are the other major touch points that people can do to start to move the needle and start to get the toxins out and improve their health?
Well, I mean, keeping with the thyroid theme, because it's really, it's such an explosion, even in the last 10 years. And we can talk about COVID and what it did, especially it really hit women's thyroid hard. But
yeah,
I just did.
I would love to actually talk about that because I mean, I saw a statistic that 25% of women have thyroid dysfunction.
Yeah. And in COVID, like, soared the numbers. There's a reason for that. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But I just did a social media video that really it went viral because I think the women were like, no one ever told me that. And I was like, when my son had me do the video, I was like, doesn't everyone know that? And my son's always like, dad, you know, like, you're like, no, you
know,
it's because, you know, you like lived your life this way. But I did a video on toilet paper. Okay. We might think toilet paper is a simple thing, right? And we go to the store and we just buy our toilet paper, but that nice white toilet paper is bleached. Okay. That bleaching process causes a production of something called dioxins. These are thyroid disruptors and cancer causers. Now, toilet paper has a unique problem because we're putting it on very absorbent tissues. And we don't have to say what the tissues. I think you know what tissues we're using toilet paper on. But that is a major, major problem. Men, prostate problems, ladies, you can figure it out. So this is an issue. Oh, the solution's simple. Just buy non-bleached toilet papers.
Yeah.
It's worth it. Oh,
and paper towels too.
Paper towels too. Because this, and also they put formaldehyde, another cancer causer and thyroid disruptor, to make it not break down in water. So these just two chemicals that I mentioned are on just standard good old toilet paper and hygiene products. So, you know, what tampons are you using, ladies? I mean, you can easily find now the non-chlorinated, non-bleached versions, and please make sure they don't have fragrances. Listen, again, another big thing you can do, make sure no products you take in your house have a fragrance unless it says it's from an essential oil. Fragrances, they don't have to tell you the ingredients. They come from these big fragrant houses and they make all the fragrance. These are billion-dollar companies, but they're all cancer causers. Fragrance is the enemy. It's in your dishwashing soap, the detergents, and all these things, all your hygiene products, everything that's absorbed into us. And the chemicals, these are no joke. Every year they realize, oh, this one's causing cancer, and then they bring it out. This one's causing cancer, and then they, you know, and you've used
they
it
for all
many years.
They all. And if you think that you're on the latest one that doesn't cause cancer, it's totally untrue. You know, people are like, oh, but my bottle is BPA free. I'm like, yeah, because it has BPB in it or some other chemical in it. And it's the same thing.
Yeah, BPA free. Everything gets like gluten free. And I watch people reach for the gluten free. And what it's loaded with super sugars. It's loaded with all these hydrogenated vegetable oil and canola oils, and it's gluten-free because that's healthy. We went through this in the fat-free times. Everything.
Oh yeah. Snack
killed.
Wells.
Yeah, it's like, so everything
I
fat.
I gained 20 pounds the year of Snack Wells.
remember the it was the Seinfeld episode. Remember they were eating the fat.
Oh my God, the
they were all
fat-free frozen
gaining weight.
yogurt.
Oh yes. that was a funny episode.
Yeah.
But true, that's what makes it funny when it's true.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, I really think that that was one of the major downfalls of our health is when we replaced all of the healthy fats with sugar.
Yes.
And that was what tipped the scales for so many people. And, you know, that's really when things started to change for the worse for all of us.
You know, you have to be careful. I always look what's in vogue and I go, you know, because things always take a left or a right, however you want to look at it. You know, it's like, okay, so this is a new thing that's going on that the anti-lectin. Okay, every healthy food.
Oh yeah.
They know this. Everyone's running from lectins out, like, because they're plant toxins. Well, they are plant toxins. However, these little plant toxins have major importance in our health. They're stressors to the microbiome, and it makes your microbiome more diverse and stronger.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I know. You take some of these things out and you feel better. It's not the lectins. It's not the nightshades. It's your gut. That's the problem. These things actually, like cures like, you actually have to lower the level to tolerance. Okay. Oftentimes when your gut's that bad, but you still need them. It's certain levels. And matter of fact, if you start working them back in at higher levels, they actually act hermetically, meaning they stress your microbiome and you can actually fix yourself with them. But anyways, the whole point though is everyone now they just go with, oh yeah, they're poison, avoid them. You know, it's like,
I know.
Wait a minute.
I actually equate it to working out with my dear friend, Jen Moore. She is my friend and my personal trainer. And, you know, when you are in that gym lifting heavy weights, it is a miserable place to be. I mean, it's so hard. And she has to remind me every time the reason that you do it here and not at home is because I'm going to make you take those last three reps that you would abandon at home, right? And it's hard work to build up the strength, but that's what we need to do.
Absolutely. Stress, when you adapt, makes you stronger. If you don't adapt, it makes you weaker. That's why you had to work up to that level of stress she was giving you. If she did that the first workout, you know, it would have been a negative, right? It's like, that's another thing. Everyone's doing cold baths are like the thing, right? They work because of a stress. Your body literally thinks it's going to die. Mm-hmm. And then all these wonderful things. Now here's the problem. Everyone goes, oh, I heard you do 3 to 5 minutes of cold bath. Well, that's for people who are really healthy and have done this, you know, because again, if you adapt, it's good. If you don't adapt, you actually create more inflammation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, start slow and low. And by the way, studies show a 10-second cold in your shower more often, it's obviously less cold, actually worked better in studies. That's because the average person they did the study on they don't adapt to a 3-minute cold bath. It's actually too stressful.
And they're not there yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think about that all the time in marathon runners, because these are people that are subjecting themselves to stress because it, you know, that is a form of stress.
Yes.
And over and over and over and over again. And we're not supposed to spend that much time in that stressful mode.
No. At what point does your body stop adapting? And again, the premise is called hormesis. And when you adapt, you get better. When you don't, you get worse. And you're right. I mean, we start doing these exercises and you can see that marathon runner as the example. You can look at them and go, yeah, you're not adapting. They start aging prematurely, right? Mm-hmm. They start getting catabolic. Their thyroid starts getting affected. You can see what's happening, you know, but any stress you don't adapt to is negative. Any stress you do adapt to is actually positive. And when you look at that premise of hormesis, you have to apply it to everything in your life, including diet. I teach a principle called diet variation. Everyone tends to eat the same 8 foods, believe it or not, because this diet,
oh, I believe it,
right? You have your people that eat keto, your paleo, your vegans, vegetarians. Typically, we have people in these. Now we have carnivore people. And I'm asked, what diet is best? I said, all of them. It's not one diet. It's the change of diet that actually adds a hormetic stress to your microbiome, and it creates something called diversity. The more diverse your organisms are, your microbiome in your gut, the healthier you are. Of all the one thing we got from all the sophisticated microbiome gut testing is diversity rules, right? The more diverse you have, the more diversity in your microbiome, the healthier you are. The less diversity, the more unhealthy you are. So you can't increase diversity by just taking probiotics. It's not that simple. Diet change is the number one thing. And what I call feast, famine, cycling, where we stress it by famine and then feasting, famine, feasting. And it actually is magic for creating diversity. But I have to teach people these principles. This isn't, ancient cultures were forced to diet change.
Yes. Yes. But that was really valuable. And absolutely. It's like we've neglected what centuries have taught us.
It's right? True. Yes.
We've completely abandoned conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
And we're paying the price for it right now.
One of the hard things, you know, and I have a program called Pump a Program where I trained 80 some coaches. And one of the hardest things the coaches face always is getting people to change their diet. The reason is because we get locked in to that diet that works. And all food outside of that is a threat of some in their minds, right? And sometimes they start to react to different foods because they're only eating these foods. And sometimes we start to build intolerances to the very foods we're eating too many of, right? So, but with they force them to shift their diet, and it's an emotional stress to people. However, what we do is we start increasing that diversity by changing the diet. So I'm a believer in keto, but I would never stay in keto. I'm in keto now. I'm here till spring, and then I'm going to shift my diet again to a higher healthy carbohydrate diet. I've done carnivore for small periods of time. But if you look at studies, if you stay in a vegan diet, you will develop certain deficiencies. But I'll tell you, a vegan diet for a short period of time is actually a great diet.
Mm-hmm.
A carnivore diet for a short period of time where you're just eating meat and fat, I've watched autoimmune replace. But if you stay in that diet, you end up with different problems. So the point is, I can be a critique of all of those diets as well.
Oh. Although I do think it's important that no matter what diet you're adopting, if you can minimize or eliminate processed food,
yes,
that's really please. Important, please. Right? There is no diet that includes Twizzlers, because I have heard people say time and time again, well, Twizzlers are vegan. And I say, yeah, I'm not, I don't actually use the term vegan for that reason, because there are so many things that are vegan that are not good for you.
A lot.
Yeah.
By the way,
and it's a huge problem.
There's a lot of things that are keto that are not good for you.
Yeah.
Paleo that are not good for you.
Yeah. There's a whole junk food industry based on these titles and terms that are not good for people. You know, my husband like jumps on these bandwagons, God bless him, where he brings these things home, and he's like, I remember when like the Impossible Burger came out or some kind of fake meat, and he brought it home. And I said, honey, like, I get it that it's vegan, but look at these ingredients. Sorry, I don't mean to pick on the Impossible Burger, but I'm going to pick on the Impossible Burger. Like, there's 3,000 things in this. This is not good for you.
You have to eat real food no matter what diet you're on. Yeah. Keto, vegan, vegetarian, paleo. You have to eat real food. If you're eating a keto or a carnivore diet and you're not eating real grass-fed, 100% grass-fed meat, you're developing disease, right? I mean, it's like, this is, you know, absolutely an essential thing that we eat real food. Look, I've identified, this is recent, and this came from a story, but I've identified four levels of eating, right? And so it's interesting for your listeners and viewers to put themselves, I think, in one of these levels. Level one, or the bottom dwellers, if you will, there's a group of people in our country that are literally, they eat most of their meals at convenience stores and in fast food. Literally, if you go to a gas station in the morning, don't get gas ever in the morning, because the problem is there's lines. Why? People eat breakfast there. Oh, and don't go at lunch, because people actually eat lunch. Okay, there's
Oh,
no
that's horrifying.
there is a group of people. I went, this is a true story. We were driving and we had to get gas. We were heading to a seminar and we pulled in. I'm like, we were, running late. So I literally found a gas station. There was nobody there getting gas. I pulled in to get gas. It wouldn't take my credit card. See cashier. I went into the cashier. There's a line of 30 people. I'm like, I came here because there was nobody. Where are these people? No one's getting gas. It took me about a second to realize they're in line because they're eating here. They all had food. They were eating breakfast. They went and got their breakfast and were eating. And it was just, there was no food. I mean, they had food, but it was processed food. Anyway,
Food-like substances.
yeah, food-like substance. They were eating breakfast there. And then they eat lunch there too. When they come home, they stop at the same convenience stores. And then maybe they have a better dinner and they eat at actually a fast food restaurant. I mean, seriously. I
Oh,
mean,
God.
that's what they're doing. Okay, so that's the bottom dollars. But then you have
Okay.
another level. That finally, this is what I say. Finally, they get to the point where they're, maybe they have some symptoms they don't like, and or they look down at their belly and get sick of it. So then they step it up a little bit and they actually start shopping in a grocery store, but then they're shopping in the middle aisles of the grocery store. So they have these people, right? So that's their diet. Most of them in the middle aisles, they take a little bit from the outer, perimeter where you have your fruits, vegetables, et cetera. And then there's another level of eating. These people eventually hear that, oh my gosh, we need to eat more whole foods. So they find themselves eating more in the perimeters and a little bit in the inner, but they still haven't gravitated to, organic things like that. And then there's the next level where they're realizing that out here is where they do most of their shopping and they're actually eating more organic foods. What level are you in? You should have a goal to get to the next level, right? So if you're a bottom dweller,
Level up,
level up.
really?
Start going to a grocery store, even if it's the darn inner shelves. You might get a healthier food, the inner aisles. And then if you're in the inner aisles, go to the outer aisles. If you're in the outer aisles, go organic. So level up. That's the challenge.
But we're fighting things like food deserts, and we're fighting things like convenience.
Yes.
And there's generations of people, because remember, in the 1950s, as we transitioned into the 60s, as a woman, you were told, like, if you truly have value, if your time is valued, then it shouldn't be spent in the kitchen. And so, there's like decades of women that never learned to cook
Yeah, it's true.
because that was considered beneath her, that, if she was really important, then she shouldn't learn to cook. And I don't mean to like only talk about women, because of course there are men that cook, and there are plenty of men sh male chefs, more than there are women, actually. But that this has created quite a problem, because we adopted this culture of convenience, and it's
Yeah,
killing us.
it is. It really is. And that's why, look, we talked about some basic things. This is another one. I mean, eat real food, start getting around the perimeter of grocery stores more. If you go in even into a health food store, Whole Foods, and you start getting in the perimeter, I can go into the chip aisle. I always say it's the most dangerous aisle. Everything has vegetable and canola oil. If I gave you one thing to change as a goal is for you and your family, get rid of vegetable and canola oil out of everything. There are chips that have avocado oil, coconut oil. These are oils that take heat better. They're better oils in general, olive oil. But stay away from those oils. They don't just stay in you for hours, days. They stay in you for months. And when I say in you, remember we drew the cell where those hormone receptors are? Yeah, it goes into your cell membranes and it's another cell membrane inflammatory driver, and that causes hormone disruption. We're all the way back where we started the conversation.
They're disrupting cellular function.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think many people don't realize how those oils are created, because it's not like an olive that you're pressing on and getting the oil out. These oils have to be extracted in very with high heat. And then the oils are becoming rancid,
Yep.
and they have to be bleached, they have to be deodorized, And what is happening in the process of making these oils is really unnatural, chemical laden, and pro-inflammatory.
Yes.
And so they're having the exact effect that they should have on our cells.
In our space, seed oils is now also the enemy, but seed oils can be done correctly. To your point, most seed oils, though, are done with that chemical extraction process that you just discussed, right? So as in general, by staying away from seed oils, you're probably doing yourself a favor. But seed oils can be pressed and done well. It's just more expensive. That's why we don't find it in food, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, you
know, not easy.
And you know, in between, because I think about this all the time when I'm dining out, because even if you're going to nicer restaurants, they're probably not spending the amount of money on their olive oil and avocado oil that I'm spending. And they're probably not even cooking with avocado oil, right? And so really, if you want to be healthy, you have to eat at home a lot.
And if you do go out, be allergic to vegetable and canola oil, meaning that's how you get attention. And I always, my favorite's just real butter, right? And then, you know, obviously Greek and Italian, real Greek and Italian restaurants, they will use
they're cooking with olive oil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You gotta know where to go. But yeah, to your point. Okay, we promised a little bit on COVID. I know we're wrapping up here, but the COVID explosion, something happened when people either got COVID, and we probably will get this shut down if we talk about the treatment. So we should probably shy away from that a little bit. But COVID caused, because it was a strange man-made virus, it created something called a cellular danger response in many people. We talked about people whose buckets were very full. People whose buckets were full, their stress bucket, meaning that they were already on the edge. When your immune systems saw this very weird virus, it put your cells in a cellular danger response. And all that means is it's something that your cells do as a survival mode. But the problem is many people got locked in to this cellular danger response. And it causes a lot of these symptoms that people are like, I still don't feel well after COVID. And the thyroid took a big, big hit, because part of this cellular danger response is actually utilizing the thyroid, because your body literally used ATP, that's the energy your cells make, as a shuttling agent out to slow the body's energy pathways down. And so you didn't keep the ATP in the cell where it needs energy. So anyways, it created a greater stress on the thyroid. One of the world's leading rheumatologists, Dr. Gillis, he found me on social media talking about this. And it's called dysautonomia, just to put another name on it, meaning autonomic nervous system is disrupted. That's what long COVID is, if you know, to put a name on that, or just simply not feeling well after COVID. One out of six people, it's estimated, doesn't feel the same after COVID. Now, there's degrees of how badly you feel, but again, thyroid, people who are already on the edge of thyroid who weren't diagnosed are now getting diagnosed. It's caused a surge because of this stress. You're still in this survival mode. So think about your mitochondria. That's where you make energy in the cells. It's a factory, meaning it makes energy, all is well. But when it goes into a battleship mode, I'm going to save your life. I'm going to save your life. The problem is that's what it did during COVID. It's still stuck as a battleship. You have to get it back to energy production. And, that I did a whole webinar on that, and we don't have time to discuss it, but that's what's going on, just for an explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because we really saw that. We saw that being borne out, where so many people just were not the same afterwards, that they couldn't reset. They couldn't get back to where they were before. And I have so many friends, colleagues in this, you know, integrative medicine space, and they really suffered.
Mm-hmm.
They really suffered and continue to suffer.
But you know what I would say? I would say the people who suffered the most, again, I know that it's an indication that your bucket was filling too much. We have to get back to emptying the buckets.
Yeah. Canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was awesome. I mean, I want to just run through a little bit of what we talked about. Obviously, we talked about that everyone does have a bucket and that it's not one thing. It's that triangulation effect of things just adding synergistically in a bad way on one another. And we're just, not able to, once your bucket overfills, that's when you start to develop all of this symptomatology. And that's for so many of us, we are hormonally deaf. That the thyroid is the canary in the coal mine. We're looking for so many things that affect us adversely, like brominated vegetable oil. And thank God that's going to come off the market. But aluminum, mercury, fluoride, there are all these drivers of disease. But there are things that we can look for, like go have your mouth checked out, have a cone CT of your mouth, and make sure that there is a qualified person reading it, looking for cavitations, looking for, if you've had root canals before, you have cavitations, if you've had amalgams, and we are all living in mold. So, making sure that we check those things. But that there are things that we can actively do today, like filtering our water, looking at the products that we're using, the paper products, making sure that we're using everything that is free of fragrance unless it's essential oils. And then, if you are whichever level of eating that you're on, level up.
Level up.
Right. Level up, avoiding those vegetable oils, canola oil, corn oil, soybean oil. And that if you're looking for help, Dr. Pompa and his team are out there. So, how can people get in touch with you or one of your providers?
If you just go to pompaprogram.com, you can actually watch a free teaching that I did more in depth on some of those topics as I you just heard you review them. You can also find me at drpompa.com and
Awesome.
social media. Drpompa gets you to my Instagram, Facebook as well.
Yeah. And for any of you who are not following Dr. Pompa on social media, you must, because it is really, really, you give a lot away there. And it's super valuable information. So this was awesome. I have to have you back because I could talk to you for hours.
Awesome.
And I'm sure the listeners loved it. So if you loved it, please, please, please share it with a friend, share it with someone who needs to hear this. And I will be back with you next week for another great topic. It's Dr. Jen. Bye for
Bye.
now.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Keeping Abreast podcast with Dr. Jen. I hope you found the discussion informative and empowering. Remember, breast health is health. So by staying informed and taking proactive steps, you have the power to optimize your well-being. My team and I encourage you to apply the knowledge gained from today's episode to make positive changes in your life and share what you've learned with others. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. Your feedback and support mean the world to us and help us to reach more people who can benefit from these conversations. Stay connected with me on social media, where I share additional resources, advice, updates, and announcements related to breast health. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Dr. Jen Simmons. And remember, my Jen has two N's. So until next time, remember to stay proactive, informed, and confident in your breast health journey. The key to your health is you.